Hey, kiddos. Glad you're here. Last week, I talked about how we live in this chaotic experience, this chaotic existence. And so many times we see all these competing narratives, competing for our hearts and our souls, competing for our attention, for our business, for our allegiance, for our trust, for our buy-in, for our support. And we've reached a point in the world when there are so many positions, there are so many angles, there are so many self-interested ideologies and half-truths that I'm convinced, and maybe this is just my own opinion, but I'm not even sure if many times we even know what truth is anymore. And you multiply that by the fact that there's tons of misinformation in the world, there's tons of manipulation, tons of propaganda all the time, of which many times we're not even savvy enough to pick up on it. And I feel like that we're kind of virtually just lost in this world. It reminded me of a verse this morning from Isaiah, and Isaiah says this: "So justice is far from us, and righteousness does not reach us. We look for light, but all is darkness; for brightness, we walk in deep shadows, like that we're blind, like we're groping along the wall. We're trying to feel." Watch out, Judy, for the cross. See, that cross is a stumbling block. Not only to the nations, but to Judy. It'd be nice if our podcast was on video. But it says that, you know, we're like blind people. We're like groping along the walls, and we're trying to find our way, and we're feeling our way like people without eyes. And at midday, we stumble as if it were twilight. Among the strong, we are like the dead. And the words of Isaiah really resonate with where we're at in the world, I think, in a lot of ways. It's like we're just trying to figure out our way, just trying to navigate, and we feel like that we're just blindly walking along, trying to feel how to get our way out and find the light. In Jesus, God's transcendent truth has now been made available for people, proving that even in the midst of great chaos, in the midst of confusion and competing interest, that there is a way that is higher for those who open themselves up to it. And the pattern and the shape of that truth that we discussed last week is observable in the life of Jesus and made available centrally through the death and the resurrection of Christ. That's good news, not just on a spiritual level for salvation, but at a very real life, practical level in our lives. Last week, you probably got completely worn out by me saying it. We're going to continue saying it for the next 2 weeks. The pattern and the shape for the life of the Christian in the church has to be simply the cross and resurrection of Christ. The voice of truth, the voice of Christ, the Holy Spirit is piercing through the competing interests of misinformation, manipulation, and half-truths and propaganda, and calling the church to be the new humanity, the new resurrection community, which demonstrates the love, the service, the mercy, the grace, the peace, and forgiveness of God to each and every person in the world, to every individual, to every group of people, no matter what the situation, no matter the circumstance, no matter rich nor poor, slave nor free, woman nor man, white nor black, Trayvon nor Zimmerman, Republican nor Democrat, liberal or conservative, no matter the situation or circumstance, we as Christians remain steadfast in the same, demonstrating love, grace, mercy, justice, peace, and forgiveness to every single person. And we close this way. We said, we can be the church community known what we are for and what we are becoming by, yes, picking up our cross and putting the old ways to death, through living in the victory and resurrection of Jesus Christ. Is there anything more important? And so that's where we went last week. To start off this week, and as to kind of give you some direction over the next 10 minutes, what we're going to do, if you are a parent and you have a child that needs to go upstairs, we would ask that you would take them upstairs and check them in at the top of the stairs, through this door, up the stairs, and there's a check-in station. While we're all moving about, what we're going to do with these colored pencils and this board on the wall, I'll ask the larger question, then I'll make it very simple so you can remember. If I were to ask you to create a church community that takes on the pattern and shape of the cross and resurrection, that looks like new life, that looks like new creation, what would it look like? So simply put, what does it look like for our church to be a community that bears the cross of Christ and the resurrection? What does that look like? How is that expressed in the body here at TLR? So All this is going to happen at the same time. We'll ask Ryan for some music. Just come up as you have thoughts about what that looks like, maybe one or two things, and put them up there. And then we'll powwow in about 10 minutes. All right, let's take about two more minutes to wrap up. Also, I sent cards around. If you weren't able to make it up front, just jot your thoughts down on a card. That would be great. Also, if you have written something down on a card, if you could kind of pass them this way, pass your cards this way, we'll have, it's the same deal. Yeah, no, if people couldn't make it up front. Yeah, just pass your cards this way to your left, and we'll get those. What's that? I can talk it while they're up there. Not afraid. Am I here? Yeah, there we go. We're ready. All right, so made some observations. A lot of these observations are broad strokes, and they don't apply to every person and everybody, and I understand. You'll kind of see as I go along, but I just want you to kind of think about this just a little bit, about the lives that we live, kind of these North American cultured lives. And, you know, it's really pretty easy for us to wake up in the morning inside of our house or our apartment or wherever we live, and we go out to the garage, and we get in our car, and we're, you know, we basically have gone from one enclosure into another enclosure, and we drive in this enclosure to wherever we're going, to our place of work, to school, what have you. We go into another structure. We stay there. We go back in our car. We go back to our house. We pull in our garage. We go into our houses, and really, it's pretty easy to not ever have any contact with anybody outside of our houses. Granted, you're at work and you talk to people, and my guess is a lot of times that's probably about work-related things, hopefully. I think we're kind of a culture, we keep the doors closed a lot. We don't even know our neighbors very well, and I'm guilty, too. My wife's really good at it. I'm really horrible at it. We don't sit on porches anymore. Oh, I said broad stroke. Yeah, we've kind of lost that, you know. We don't sit on our porches. We don't tell stories anymore. We don't talk with each other. Jeff sits on the porch, and Angie does. I get it, some of those folks. But I'd say, by and large, if you look at our culture, we really kind of stay confined. We stay in our houses. You know, I think the other thing that's interesting, the more that I thought about it, is how much we create and participate in artificial virtual community. You guys know I'm the guilty of all guilty, so. But sometimes I really just get concerned about that. I've really been thinking about it a lot lately, just the effect of artificial virtual community and what that's doing to real relationships. You don't even have to be yourself. You know, people can kind of portray themselves as one thing, and you don't even have to share that much. You know, some people share way too much, but it's like all of us have our issues and our struggles. Can we agree on that? And it's like not everybody can kind of put up a facade and pretend to be a certain thing without us really knowing what's behind the veneer, what's going on behind the scenes. And I think the thing that really bothers me even more than that, while many of us are guilty of how much time we spend in these virtual artificial communities with people, I'm probably even more concerned about what we're teaching our kids. Actually, I'm really concerned. I could probably go into any number of homes even mine at some times, and see my kids completely glued to technology. And the problem is that they're losing the ability to relate to people. They're losing the ability to have a real conversation with people. They're losing the ability to communicate feelings and emotions, and they're losing the ability to tell stories and have imaginations. And I think that that's heartbreaking. Now, I'm not saying there aren't exceptions, and I get it. But I'm saying if you look at where we're going culturally, we're creating some very unhealthy foundations. To compound the problem, we drive to a centralized church building, and we gather artificially with people that we're really not in community with. And I know that that's been going on for a long time in the U.S. My wife was so offended by that she left. I'm sorry. But think about it. Rather than a natural ebb and flow of community and living life with one another in the places that we naturally are, okay, so we've run into our homes, we've locked the doors, we don't spend any time talking to our neighbors or even knowing them. But now we get in our cars and we drive to centralized church buildings in an artificial community that is kind of forced and not real, which lends itself to all sorts of issues in and of itself. Not that this is wrong and bad. What I'm actually going to get to is, since this is what we have, how do you redeem it? How do you turn it into something more relational, more real, more authentic? Instead of gathering in natural, relational, and geographical house churches in our neighborhoods with our neighbors, we drive distances to meet up with other Christians, but many times we miss out on the great beauty and essence of life and community. It's like, if you're not getting it there, then if you drive to this thing and you're not getting it here, then where are you getting it? And you're not getting it on Facebook. Man, my heart was breaking. Anybody know Survivor Man? Les Stroud? Yeah, only three people. Shame on you people. It's my favorite show. So Survivor Man actually started another show, of which I can't remember the name of it. But this time he was going around the globe, kind of diving into indigenous cultures to not survive, but to see how these people have thrived and survived without becoming so technological, okay? Because he believes that we're on the verge of losing these populations of people because it's becoming smaller. So he spends time with these people, and I just had two emotions. One emotion was a real sadness for us as Americans, and then hope that maybe somehow that we can get through some of the trends that we're experiencing and get back to something a lot more real. You know, these people, whenever your objective for the day, and I'm not, I got to be careful. Okay, I'll tell you what they did, and then this is cracking myself up. Nobody's going to think this is funny, but, you know, they would spend all day trying to get their food. Like, that was the job. They would go out together and they would hunt and gather. The men would hunt, the women would gather, and that's what they were still doing. And then guess what? They would come back at the end of the day, hopefully successful. And then it was preparation together. Well, the guys usually went and smoked their pipes and the women were preparing. That wasn't funny. I'm going to be in so much trouble. Do you guys really want me to come back and teach here? I've got the giggles. There's no point of recording this. Oh, gosh. All right. So, you know, how can I even be serious and tell something serious when I'm cracking up? So, yeah, they would hunt and gather, and then they would come back, and they would be preparing the meal together, and then they would eat together. And then after eating, they would have the fire, and they would sit around, and either they would dance or tell stories. And I was just like, man, how much are we missing, you know? How much of what many of us would maybe laugh and ridicule, maybe the average American would laugh and ridicule and say, oh, how primitive that is, and you're not sophisticated, and you don't know what high life is and the quality. And I'm saying, maybe these guys have it more figured out than we do, you know? Here's the irony. Probably about 6 months ago, I was contacted by email from a man who lives in Kenya who somehow stumbled upon me and asked if I would come, if I would fly to Kenya and help their little church of 25 people learn how to be the church. Isn't that hilarious? And it's like he's been very persistent of wanting me to come there. And I'm just like, you don't understand that you have it figured out. You know, what you're doing is, it's right. And what we're doing is probably not so right. You know, I'm not saying the TLR is a terrible place. I'm just saying we've got a long way to go. And I would even go further, say if we've got a long way to go, then other churches have a long way to go too. That just gave me a thought. Maybe many times the things that we think are the things that we need to create and fabricate for community aren't actually what it is. And maybe the things that we're doing on a very simplistic level is exactly what it is. I want to hit a verse really quick. Actually, if someone would just turn to Acts 2:42-47, I feel dirty and guilty by going to this passage because it seems like that I've spent a lot of time in that place before. But if somebody would just grab that, stand up with your loud, robust, beaming voice and just read that passage. This is just going to give us just a small taste of the early church's beginnings. Okay, Steve, give me, like, in 5 bullet points, just real quick, like, what were the things that they were doing together? Breaking bread together. So they were eating the bread, not just breaking it. Okay. They sold and helped those in need. They shared with one another. What else? Meeting every day and prayed together. That sounds incredibly complex, doesn't it? Actually, it sounds very simple. It sounds very basic. I mean, with this whole teaching series from last week to this week and the next 2 weeks, I feel like what I want to do is really try to whittle this thing down to the very essential forms, okay? Because we've made church incredibly complex, and in doing so, we're missing out on some of the very basic, essential forms of it. You know, last week we talked about, and we will continue to talk about, the pattern and the shape by which the Christian and then the church ought to move forward is the cross of Christ and the resurrection. But I would say, in terms of what a church actually begins looking like in the most simplest form, is just that. Why make it more? Why decorate it? Why make something more fabricated? Why make something artificial? Like, when everything that we're trying to escape is artificiality, wouldn't it be nice to actually be in community with something more real and more authentic? What did everybody write down? So we asked the question, what would it actually look like for a church to take on the cross of Christ and look like resurrection, look like new creation? Mutual delight in one another, walking in the sunlight of the Spirit of Jesus, love one another, all eyes on Jesus, true sacrifice for others, accepting others, no matter how different they may be, helping hands, servants' hearts, a bluer sky, a greener grass, brighter clouds, sparkly rain, a better day, acceptance, open hands with the burning heart, the Spirit of God, love, unity, love your neighbor as yourself, home, and a candle. Does anybody else have any on cards that you wrote down? Have they all been passed this way? I'd like to read them. Thank you. A big heart. Service to the poor and suffering. Equality between genders and races. Open to discourse. Non-rigid approach to teaching and worship. Real community that supports rather than condemns. Spiritual growth. Teaching, learning, responding. We are a community known by its actions, by its love. We move at the pace of the Spirit, waiting to hear the pulse so that we may dance in its beat. Serving together, serving others, living in peace with each other, speaking truth and love, sharing our possessions with those in need. Man, you can't do anything in this place. Last week while I'm teaching, my wife is texting me, speaking of technological problems. I'm never going to get through any of this. Somebody wrote down, naked vegetarians. Yeah, that's nice. It's their play on Adam and Eve, and yeah, hopefully. Role of the church, listening to the hurt of those around us, doing whatever we can to meet those needs, placing focus on human interaction. Nice. Excellent. You guys like the way that sounded? I mean, not just one or two, but like all of them together, other than the naked vegetarian one. I mean, in order to begin finding for ourselves the life that is in community, like the early church, that goes beyond just meeting together on Sundays, that goes beyond surface level interactions, that goes beyond not knowing the people with whom you are in community with, that goes beyond simply smiles and handshakes and bro hugs. The pattern and shape, again, not just for our individual lives, but also for this church community, must be the cross and resurrection of Christ. The orientation of our individual lives must move beyond self-interest and what we want and what we can get out of situations, and move toward looking to the interest of those around us. And the only way to move to those places of authenticity, of committed relationships through the good times and the bad, of honesty and vulnerability and truth, is the cross and resurrection of Christ. And I'll tell you why I keep saying that, because the cross of Christ beckons each one of us to come and die. It beckons each and every one of us to bring that old person and put it to death on the cross in order to be resurrected to new life with the Spirit of God. The old ways are crucified, and through the Spirit of God, we become a new creation like we've been talking about. We become presently what we anticipate in its fullness in the future in God's kingdom. And that kind of life and community begins to look like what you described in your cards, quite frankly. I'm going to tell you. So you guys are like, oh, man, I wish you just quit talking 30,000 foot. Like, that's good stuff that you're talking about, but where does the rubber meet the road? You know, like, what's that look like on a practical basis? You can talk about the cross of Christ in our own lives and about how that ought to look within the church, but what does that look like lived out? I've got a couple of one story and then something else that I wrote that I want to get to. Several years ago, some of us started a confession group, and in the context of that confession group, of being in the midst of other guys who are being incredibly honest and vulnerable, of just pouring ourselves out and sharing our hearts and confessing our sins to one another, of opening up those dark places within our lives that we've kind of hid from other people for so long. That's easy to do whenever you just show up to church on Sunday. Whenever you are never vulnerable with other people, you can hide those places forever and never expose it to the light of Christ. We actually came together and opened those places up and let that stuff out so that the light of Christ could invade. Whenever I met with those guys, I confessed to them. And then much later, before all of you, some of you were probably here, some of you may not have been, but I shared confessionally that among a million other things that I deal with in my life, that one of the struggles that I've had in my past was looking at pornography. And it wasn't like an addiction, but it was something that had its hold on me. It had its hold on my heart, and it's like I could not get away from it. It was just easy. It was accessible, whatever. And I shared that in the context of brothers who I love and who I trust and knowing that they wouldn't share that with anyone else. But then also I felt like the burden of a church leader is to say to a group of people, hey, I want to confess to you and before God that these are the things that I've dealt with in my past and that I opened up myself for the light of Christ to come in, okay? So in some ways, this is where the rubber hits the road. That's bearing your cross, right? That is taking on the cross of Christ with you and saying, I hate this person I've become. I hate this old man that keeps coming to life in me that I keep giving into, and I become somebody that is ugly and hideous, that does not value women, that doesn't value other people, that's self-interested, that's only interested in my own fulfillment, even though it's not fulfillment, momentary fulfillment. And I took that and I carried the cross, okay? By sharing that with a community of people, guess what? You begin helping me bear that cross together. I'm not in isolation anymore. I've opened myself up and you're now carrying the cross with me. I no longer feel alone and isolated outside of community. I feel like there's a group of people who understand me and can help me carry the cross. But beyond that, God starts bringing something to life. God starts regenerating my heart. God starts mending something that was broken. And God's Spirit begins working out and bringing me to a person that I've never known before. And all the ways that I've tried to beat myself into submission to stop doing those things, I was completely incapable until the Spirit of God got within me and said, the chains are broken. You no longer have to be in that place. I've released you. And by me speaking that outward, the Spirit of God starts working and planting seeds within other people's hearts as well. But it goes beyond that. Because people here go out and they talk to other people as well. And there's an amazing story that happened through TLR about a person who took that confession of mine and was just met up with a person who's really struggling with pornography and really dealing with the addictive nature of it. And this person said, you know what, Brandon shared the same struggle. He spoke about it. He was confessional about it. And I think that you need to talk to him. And that person contacted me. And then we started talking. And all of a sudden, I'm helping carry the cross here, right? And we're walking down that path because we know that something's being put to death and something else is coming to life. And that's where the rubber hits the road. That's what it looks like to be in community with one another, not, once again, hiding in isolation outside of community, feeling utterly alone, like nobody can relate, like nobody can understand. Like, isn't the indictment of the church is that we're a bunch of phony baloney, superficial people that get together and smile, and there's like all kinds of issues that we're dealing with, but no one's afraid to say it, or everyone's afraid to say it. Isn't that the indictment? Man, whenever you realize that we all together come to the foot of the cross, together, where no one stands above the other, where no one holds the hammer and the nail in judgment, whenever we finally recognize that we're walking to that place together, where we're bearing the cross together, finally, we can open up and be honest about what we're struggling with. And people can help us carry our crosses. And transformation can happen within the church. This is key. When the pattern and shape of our lives becomes the cross and the resurrection, we no longer approach community as something that we can get out of it, but something that we can give. How many times is yours or anybody else's or mine, how many times is your happiness, your joy, your peace, your contentment, predicated upon what you're going to get out of church? What if? What if it's not about you? What if the entire point of you being here is not for yourself? What if the entire point of you being here is to help someone else carry their cross? What if the whole point of singing a hymn on Sunday or joining in worship with your voice is to give words of healing and edification to the person sitting next to you? What if you don't like the style of what's being sung? Maybe it's not about you. Maybe it's about the person who's absolutely crushed on the inside that needs to hear those words. And you're the one who delivers it. Have you ever thought, have you ever heard anybody say, well, I don't think I'm going to go to my Bible study, or I'm not going to show up to house church because I don't like what I'm getting? Maybe you've said it. Maybe I've said it. What if it's not about what you're getting out of it, but what you can give? Man, the selfish nature by which we live has to die. Yeah, it's love. It's love demonstrated. Whoever wrote that, that's awesome. I'd even go further and say, it's the breaking and the pouring out. That's what we do. We're people who break ourselves open and pour ourselves out for other people, for those around us, for those who we're in community with. It is a spirit pouring in me and working through me to pour life and love into you, and then you to me, and you to others, and us together. I wrote this a few weeks ago. If you've read it, thank you. You'll just recognize what I'm reading, but I had an experience. I'll just read the story. I sat down at the dinner table after a long week, after a long day at work. I looked at my two beautiful daughters. I saw the smile on my nine-month-old baby boy. I watched my wife put the final touches on our meal, and as we joined each other around the table, one of my daughters began to pray, and this overwhelming feeling came over me, and it wasn't simply thankfulness and appreciation. It was something different, so different that I immediately jumped up after the prayer and began quickly typing on my iPhone, of course, quickly typing what I was feeling, and here's what I wrote. As I go home and I sit around the table with my family, I know that no matter the war that has been waged against me throughout the day, no matter the forces that have come against me, and no matter how much I've been torn to pieces, the healing, restorative work of God through my family mends me. It makes me whole again. I can courageously face another day, another week, another year, because I have a family ready to receive me and shower me with love and acceptance. Praise God. I'm incredibly fortunate that I'm able to experience this each day, and I pray that I never take it for granted. It's not lost on me how many children and adults around the world do not get to experience this slice of heaven on earth, and it breaks my heart. It breaks my heart for the broken families, the orphan children, the widows and widowers, the parents who lost a child or children, the loner without a home, the homeless individual, the individual locked behind bars, the social outcast, the disabled who have been abandoned. And I don't think it's by chance occurrence that we read about Jesus communing with these very people. Because every single person is valuable and needs a family who loves them, who nurtures them, who values them, who prays over them, and allows the healing power of God to make them whole again. The compassionate hand of our loving, nurturing God does not leave us alone and broken, but welcomes us and invites us into the most important thing on earth, family. And not one person, no matter the situation or the circumstance, has been left alone without a family. For our Lord assured us that he will not leave us as orphans, comfortless, desolate, bereaved, forlorn, or helpless. The Spirit of God invites us into a family. The Comforter opens his arms wide and holds us when we are broken. The Counselor gives us wise advice and guidance as we move along our journey. The Helper gives us assistance and instruction when we're having difficulty. The Intercessor groans, pleads, and prays on our behalf when we don't have the words. The Advocate works on our behalf with our best interest in mind. The Strengthener lifts us up and encourages us when we have nothing left to give. This is what I experienced at the dinner table that night. The Spirit of God working in and through me, but maybe more importantly, through each person in my family, on my behalf and in my favor. I was loved. I belonged. I experienced a richness and a fullness that could never be understood or experienced apart from God. And guess what? It is the church, it is through the church that the Spirit invites everyone into a family. The church is the one place on earth where broken families, orphan children, widows and widowers, parents who have lost children or children, loners without a family, homeless individuals, individuals locked behind bars, social outcasts, the disabled who have been abandoned are welcomed and invited, are comforted and encouraged, are guided, are assisted, are prayed over, are advocated for, are strengthened, are mended, and are loved. And no matter the war that has been waged against us throughout the day, no matter the forces that have come against any of us, and no matter how much we have been torn to pieces, the healing, restorative work of God through this family mends us and makes us whole again. We together can courageously face another day, another week, another year, because we are part of a family that receives us and showers us with love and acceptance here in this family. This church community is family and must be a place where people can come from places of isolation in their sin and to a place of healing. The body of Christ bears the cross together and resurrects together as one. This church community must be a community of breaking and pouring. This church must be a place of brokenness and healing. This church must be a place defined by the cross and the resurrection. You know, if we can't bear the cross for one another, how are we ever going to bear it for our enemies? You get that? If we can't bear the cross for each other, with each other, how are we ever going to bear it for our enemies? We have a certain idea shaped by our culture about the way church life ought to be and how we spend our time and how we spend our energy and how we spend all of our efforts trying to pursue it. But all the while, we absolutely miss the very essence of what it is. We're in the midst of it, right here, right now. This is it. It's real life. It's not fabricated. It's not decorated. It's raw. It's real. Guess what? It's full of hurt. It's full of pain. Sometimes it's full of betrayal. But guess what? It is also victoriously about forgiveness, about reconciliation, about grace, and about and peace. And I think that this part's important. You know, the church isn't about getting hurt, getting sideways with someone, or not getting your way and then running away from the person, problem, or issue. You know, that's the thing. It's like, how many times do we see somebody get their feelings hurt and then run? Somebody get sideways with somebody and run. Man, I think what the cross looks like in that situation is, what happens when two people who've had conflict, who are sideways, who are having this tension of this conflict, both pick up their crosses and both die to their own egos, their own pride, their own self-interest, and say, you know what, it's worth forgiving. It's worth working through and reconciling. It is bearing the weight of your cross, sacrificing every ounce of self-importance, pride, ego, and what I deserve, and instead submitting in love. And it's painful. Yes, the cross is painful, FYI. You know what? And sometimes it might be easier to say about another person, they are not worth it. You ever thought that? You're not worth it. Actually, you are. I'm just kidding. You know what? They don't deserve it. While we didn't deserve it, the cross was still carried for us. While we were the ones who fought against and were the vilest offenders, we understand that the whole basis of the cross and resurrection is something that was done on your behalf because you didn't deserve it. And guess what? Whenever you take up the pattern and the shape of the cross in your own life, you do it on behalf of those who don't deserve it. It's Romans 5, 6 through 8. I didn't make that up. In our friendships, in our marriages, and in our families, and especially in our churches, we too many times act as if there's a disagreement, a problem, or an argument, that it's not worth it. But we fail to recognize that this is how life is lived and experienced for the follower of Christ. It's the tears being shed. It's working through issues and problems. It's praying over it with one another. It's not saying, screw you, I'm done with you. It's not saying you're not worth it. It's not, I'm running from this marriage because you are worthless, because I don't trust you. It is saying, you know what, part of being in family with one another is taking the hard road with one another, of extending grace, working towards forgiveness and reconciliation, of picking up our crosses, of trying to work together, of carrying one another's cross into new life. We have to get the kids in 9 minutes. So this is not going to work. Heather. Thank you. Thank you, Heather. So what we're going to do next week, I'm going to shorten down what I'm talking about, edit myself. Next week, I want to get really super practical and say, okay, let's take the last 2 weeks and let's really break it down to what it starts looking like here. Like, it's nice to talk about it and it's nice to say the same things. And man, I don't like talking about stuff if it actually doesn't mean, if it doesn't translate into something, the word becoming flesh. If it doesn't look like that, then I'm not interested in it. One thing I want to challenge you to this week, and then I'm going to open up the last 5 minutes for people just to talk, like stand up if you want to share something. But one thing I want to challenge you this week, there are people that are in this community that you don't know. There are people here that you've never taken the time to know, that you've seen week after week. And I want to challenge you to make it your goal to get to know one another. Find somebody that you don't know anything about. Find somebody that you've passed 100 times and said hello to and actually have a conversation. Like, walls have to be broken down in this place. If we are going to be even close to moving toward the kind of simplistic, authentic community described in the book of Acts, where people were praying with one another, sharing their things. It's like, man, how are you going to pray together and share your things if you don't even know the person's name? I guess you could. But how do you know somebody's needs if you don't even know their name? That's the crazy thing. So that's what I want to challenge everybody with this week. Next week, whenever we get together, I'm going to actually have people break out into groups, hopefully of people that you don't know so well, and we're going to take communion in groups together, breaking bread together. So for the last 5 minutes, and by the way, if you want to come up after we're finished here and take communion, by all means, we invite you to do that. It's just that we're going to have to dismiss to get the kids in 5 minutes, and I know that what I had planned is going to take 20 or 30. So one last thing I'll say is, I say this a ton, I love taking communion together because it reminds me every single time of the breaking and the pouring. It reminds me of breaking the body and the blood that was poured. And it just, it's like, not only was it done for me, but it's the shape and the pattern by which that I need to live my life as well. It's an awesome, incredible reminder. All right, let's hear from you guys. 5 minutes. What do you guys think? Stories to share, insights, revelations.